Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as, well, an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man I've come to regard as one of the real heroes of that war, both for his courage in describing the problem, his clarity in understanding it, and his tirelessness in trying to make sure that the rest of us grasp what we are up against in the form of Islamic supremacism, its core doctrine, Sharia, and the means by which its adherents seek to impose their will on all of us, namely jihad. He is Dr. Robert Spencer, one of the most accomplished practitioners of this business of any that I have come across. He is an author many times over, and he is the director of a truly indispensable enterprise. It is called Jihad Watch. It is a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center, itself an indispensable organization. He's also vice president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative, the author of, I think, 14 books now, including two New York Times bestsellers, and most recently, The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS. Dr. Spencer, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Good to have you with us, sir.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I'm particularly pleased to have the chance to visit with you because over the past couple of days, the sorts of issues on which you are arguably the most knowledgeable person in America have broken into prime time in terms of the political focus of the moment, the Republican presidential contest, with comments or lack thereof, really, by Donald Trump, and some comments by Dr. Ben Carson, two of the outsiders in this race. Talk for a moment, if you would, Robert, about what it is that Ben Carson specifically has said in warning that constitutionally you cannot be president of the United States if you embrace and practice this supremacist code of Sharia.
Well, he said that there were elements of Sharia that contradicted important constitutional principles, and that consequently, an observant Muslim who believes in Sharia should not be president. And there was nothing actually false or even legitimately offensive about those words. The fact is that Islamic law, Sharia, does deny the freedom of speech, the freedom of conscience, the equality of rights of women, the equality of rights of non-Muslims with Muslims, and numerous other features that are at variance with constitutional principles. And consequently, Ben Carson's statement was entirely correct.
Yet it has proven wildly controversial. We're having, for example, Representative Andre Carson of Indiana standing up and denouncing Ben Carson. Is there anything about Andre Carson's background that we ought to take into account in his representations?
Well, Andre Carson is a Muslim himself. And so he is part of the effort in the United States by the American Muslim leadership to whitewash precisely the elements of Islam that are at variance with constitutional principles. Precisely, in other words, the elements that Ben Carson is talking about now. American Muslim advocacy groups like the Hamas-linked Council and American Islamic Relations and others have made a concerted effort over the years to make Americans think that Sharia is entirely benign, and they have tried to downplay and minimize and outright deny, in the face of mountains of evidence, the aspects of Sharia that are at variance with constitutional principles. They've tried to obscure the fact that all the Sharia regimes in the world, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Northern Sudan, and the others, are authoritarian, hardline regimes that deny women's rights, that deny any kind of free discourse in the society. They want to completely obscure these facts, and so Ben Carson is shedding light on them. No wonder they have him in their crosshairs.
Indeed. And this raises a question that is, of course, of concern to not only us here in the United States and to our Constitution, Robert Spencer, but also in terms of what we're seeing taking place in Europe, even before this tsunami of so-called refugees out of the Middle East. Give us a flavor, as you see it, of the extent to which this Islamic supremacist program is now really assaulting the Western civilization as practiced in Europe these days, and what the implications might be if tens, hundreds of thousands, perhaps more, of these Sharia-adherent Muslims, at least, turn up in Europe in the days ahead.
Well, the thing is, these refugees are not all that they seem to be. Last February, the Islamic State, or ISIS, or ISIL, they threatened to flood Europe with 500,000 refugees. Now they've come in, and an Islamic State spokesman just recently said that they've already sent 4,000 of their men into Europe with these refugees. More are coming. And the education minister of Lebanon, in discussions with Prime Minister David Cameron of Great Britain, said that in his country, there are 1.1 million Syrian refugees at this point, and he estimates that there are at least 20,000 active Islamic Jihad terrorists among them, and that he's seen their activities in the refugee camps. They are on their way to Europe, and he figures that there are quite a few already there now. And so this has to be understood not solely or even perhaps at all as a genuine humanitarian refugee crisis. If it were, then we would see many more children, many more women, many more non-Muslims among the refugees instead of this massive influx of young and physically fit Muslim males. And the fact is that this is much more likely to be a hijra, an emigration for the sake of Allah, which is a venerable concept in Islamic theology and law, the idea of moving from one place to another in order to bring Islam to a new area. And this also, the evidence for this is also found in the fact that the refugees are increasingly aggressive and have been attacking police forces and screaming Allahu Akbar and so on, and making it clear that they're not just poor huddled masses looking, yearning to breathe free.
We're hearing from John Kerry, our Secretary of State, that the Obama administration is determined to bring perhaps 80,000 or more of these folks, not all of them Syrians, but apparently many of them hailing from these refugee camps, from whence, as you say, Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, or other jihadists are likely to spring. Let me turn to one other question with you, Robert, quickly before we left to let you go. There is much controversy at the moment, as you know, concerning this young Muslim student in Irving, Texas, and a clock that he brought to school. As you have been able to parse this story, what do you think is going on here? Was this young man subjected to some kind of racial profiling or religious profiling, or is there more there than meets the eye at the moment?
It's a ridiculous claim that he was subjected to racial or religious profiling, even though it's going all around the world, and is in Barack Obama has claimed this as well, and so on. The fact is that there is a zero tolerance policy in the schools because of all the school shootings, and the schools are very nervous. You can argue, and I think that there's a perfectly cogent case to be made, that the schools are hysterical about these things, suspending a student for fashioning his Pop-Tart into a gun or making his finger into a gun and so on. This kind of thing goes on and is ridiculous, drawing a picture of a gun and they're suspended, but it's not based on racial or religious lines. And I'm absolutely certain, there's no doubt whatsoever, that this young man with his clock that looks so much like a suitcase bomb would have been suspended or arrested if he were a white Methodist or Presbyterian or what have you, and it had nothing to do with his being a Muslim. I think it much more likely that the whole incident was provoked. His father is somebody I debated actually a few years ago, and he also was involved with trying to counter the Quran burner Terry Jones's efforts, and it seems to me that he's been trying to make a name as a warrior against so-called Islamophobia for some years. And it seems much more likely that sending his son into the school with a suspicious-looking object was designed to create an incident in which they could cry Islamophobia and thereby get the precedent set that if you see something, say something, unless it's a Muslim, in which case you better not do anything because you might be called a racist and a bigot.
Indeed, and in particular, it seems the family's principal target and that of the Islamists that quickly gathered around them, notably the Council on American-Islamic Relations, was the mayor of Irving, Mayor Beth Van Dyne, who has stood up against, as you know, the leeching of this Sharia program into a tribunal there and so on, then this seems all the more likely to be, as you say, Robert Spencer, a provocation. Thank you very much, Robert, for all you do, and not least for your important new book, The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS. Keep it up, sir. Come back to us soon, if you would. And in the meantime, Godspeed. Next up, we will talk with Ned May. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.